You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day and a good weekend. And I hope you get a chance to do all the things you should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it is not, and it has to be done, you'll get it done, and you'll get it done safely. You'll have your mask on. You'll keep your distance. Your hands will be clean. You'll be safe. Wherever you are on the planet, be safe. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to the archive. You just go to timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. In the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled African Perspectives. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times they're going to give are Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia, with Brother Wahad Ahmed, followed by Black Therapy Central from 8 to 9 with Dr. Cambon and her daughter, Nataki Cambon. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from Encobra. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. And then on Thursdays from 7 p.m. to 9, After 7 with host Shani B. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening. That's right, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays from 8 until Saturdays at 4, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host Shani B. No, I apologize. Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. LaWanda Chambers. And then at 7 p.m. on Saturday, the Elders Council, the Sankofa Elders Council with Brother Alfonso Watkins. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening. At 7 p.m. on Sunday, once again, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Brothers and sisters, please go to WeBuyBlack.com and look at the products that are being offered. Also, too, on the website, there's a donation. We want to create a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. Everybody can donate because eventually we want to have one in your city, in your area, where we can have produce that is produced by us, foods that are produced by us from canned goods, frozen food, whatever. They are produced by us.
WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tahembe is on his way today. That's right. November 20th. Going and from this day to the 30th of the month, going to Tanzania. I'm looking forward to my brother when he returns. Looking forward to see the video. Looking forward to having conversation with him about upcoming trips. And you should too. Please, brothers and sisters, go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Look at the website. Everything you need for a trip of a lifetime is right there. The next trip is December 24th to January 5th. Going to Ghana. The next year, April 2nd through April 12th. Going through Senegal. Going to Senegal and Gambia. And then May 24th to June 4th, going to Ghana, West Africa. And then November 19th to the 29th, it's not South Africa. It's Tanzania again. No, yes, it's Tanzania again, and I plan to be on that trip, and I hope you'll join me. Going to Tanzania. You can go to the website, put the down payment down, pay on it. Since it's a year away, you can pay on it $100 a month. I'm quite sure some of us, I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, that everybody has these opportunities, but believe me, many of us do. And some of us can make a sacrifice. Some of us, because it is a trip of a lifetime, and I understand the total cost with money you have to have to get there, but everything is, you know, everything is included. You drop that 36. I don't know if it's still going to be $3,700, but that's what it has on here, $3,700. But we'll see. Think about it. All right. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. Brother Renoka Rashidi, his next trip, he's been doing now. He's doing a lot of Zoom meetings. His next trip is going to be in October. Actually, his next trip is really going to be to Kemet, which is in August 1st through the 14th, going to Kemet. And then going to Uganda and Rwanda, October 5th through the 16th. Beautiful pictures. Just check it out. Go to his website, drrenoko.com. Drrenoko.com. If you want to give Baba Renoko a call, give him a call at 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. Dr. Renoko Rashidi. Habashah Incorporated. Brothers and sisters are doing the work here and on the continent. Habashahincorporated.org. Habashah stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. They have great projects, the great project that they're doing in terms of here in the U.S., the Kashi Project that they have. They have the Sustainable Agriculture, Golden Growers. Man, these brothers deserve to be supported. Check out HabashahIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group. The Ledge Group. Ledge stands for the Land for the Development, Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. They're doing great work on the continent in various countries and basically dealing with food, water, clothing, shelter. So they have it together, y'all, and they deserve to be supported. The Ledge Group. Also, too, you can go on Facebook to the Grand Rising, and that's going to be a part of that. They have 12 active projects. They're in six countries. They have 172 people employed globally. They have 259 members. Become a member of the Ledge Group. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, located in the Greenbrier Mall, right near the food court. The Medu Bookstore. The number to call is 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. Featuring fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, figurines, T-shirts. I mean, just what you need. Check it out. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Also, check out Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. The number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Brother Gazim De Ajamo. He has a coffee bar in there now. He has delicious Cameroon boil for your enjoyment and other things. Bean pie. Supreme bean pie. That's right. The supreme bean pie out of Chicago. You know how I rave about that. Man. Hope you should get a supreme bean pie. Call the Muhammad Smiles number 15 in Atlanta over there on Camelton Road for the holiday gathering. And I know the holiday gathering is going to be very small, and it should be, because there might be somebody coming to your home, you know, family and friend that you may not have seen in a while, and they may be asymptomatic. And a person like myself who's up there in age and with preconditions, and I tell you, when you look at the spiking numbers, this is sad, ain't it? It is sad. But we'll talk about that in a minute. Ulu, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Last night they had their Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. You go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. They had a good conversation last night. And from 9 to 10 at 9 p.m. on Thursdays. 9 p.m. on Thursdays. And if you just want to call and listen or call and give your question, comment, or concerns, you dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Sanjay-IED, Sister Gabrielle really is doing outstanding work. Please check out sanjay-IED.org and look at the work that they're doing with education, healthcare, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship. Go to Sanjay, SONJAY-IETI.org. Sanjay-IET. Ackerman Institute. Please make your check or money order out to Ackerman Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's for folks like myself, you know, who still just write a check. But I do now pay them. I donate to them by Cash App and all the other ones I donate to, you know, Renoco and a few others. I donate by Cash App. But, you know, I have no problem with putting a check in the mail, you know. There are more and more people and less jobs. And I'm trying to keep the brothers and sisters who work at the post office, which a lot of our brothers and sisters do work at the post office. What a job. But go to Cash App if you want to donate to Ackerman Institute and the programs that they're doing. Cash App, $YAA, the letter M, then Baruti, B-R-U-T-I. Okay. Also, too. Tomorrow from 5 to 9. Tomorrow, Saturday, November 21st, Kibuka, remembering the middle passage through the eyes of our ancestors. Remembering the middle passage through the eyes of our ancestors. Donate $20 a family, $15 a couple, $10 for an adult, $5 for children. And, of course, you put the information in that's vital. Kibuka, K-E-B-U-K-A. K-E-B-U-K-A, Kibuka, your name, and then your email address so they can send you the link so you can be a part of the conversation tomorrow from 5 to 9, Kibuka. Remember it's very spiritual, it's very moving. I tell you, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. I love what Baba Baruti and I'm a Yah. And be a part of it, brothers and sisters. You can be a part of it. Kibuka. The Enye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Enye Sasim. November 19th. Any attempt to find some slavery. Captivity. I don't like the word slave or slavery. You know, we were not slaves, we were captives. So I didn't like to use the word. And reason why I consistently do it, because who pushes and promotes that word more often? Europeans, Caucasians. Because they want to continuously put into our minds that we ain't been nothing but a slave. We ain't been nothing but a slave. That's why I'm always promoting my brother LaRouneid's book. Why we shouldn't call our ancestors slaves, because we were not slaves. We were captives. So, November 19th, in an attempt to find some captives-related moral consciousness in the hearts and minds and psyches of captive owners, it is an insult of those of us who are descendants of captors. Descendants of those who are captive. Gregory Wright. In order to feel useful while wasting energy denying and suppressing the pain in hope that these dysfunctional coping mechanisms will lead to release, too many of us waste an enormous amount of time debating over numbers, debating over how many of us were murdered, as if fewer numbers makes it less traumatic or wrong. If they murdered one of us, that is far too many. Even the lowest estimates given by sterile, conniving European statisticians working in validation of European politicians seeking to minimize or universalize our pain by using unrepresentative samples or only looking at one facet of our ma'afa, our trails of blood and tears, the dungeons, or the transport ships, dwarf those of any other people's Holocaust. We can use the word Holocaust. European Jews co-opted that word. They have a word. It's called Shoah. But we have a word too, Amangamizi and the Ma'afa. But a Holocaust means an act against a people that is so morally demonstrative. It's not just against those people, but it's against all humanity. Holocaust. According to Dr. John Henry Clark, we can start with no less than 60 million. Yet, he also said that 100 million is more likely an estimate. John G. Jackson agrees. The great scholar, war scholar John G. Jackson agrees. S.C. Anderson said that we should give a total of no less than 280 million because we must account for those who would have been born during our destruction. Affirm, I completely reject the lie of a good captor. Affirm, I completely reject the lie of a good captor. November 20th. Acceptance of prevailing standards often means we have no standards of our own. Gene Toomer. There is a litany of historically identifiable reasons for the Europeans' actions, their grand efforts at image control, and the lies that they have concocted to convince others that they are human. Their new fascination with dogs and other pets is but one in a long line of tricks to convince us that they love all living things. Fear drives Europeans beyond being in the presence of creatures who do not judge their particularities. This public show of a newfound affinity toward canines is no more than an effort to increase their security by accepting guard dogs. However their size, dogs can bark, which is an early warning sign. And they bite. Weapons. Their bark, bite, and undying loyalty are the foremost reason that dogs are historically claimed as their best friend. A dog is a man's best friend, but a canine can't be mine. Man, we should recognize that this is the same deceit that they have passed off in their efforts to have European females produce more babies and convince us that it is based upon a non-existence genuine love of family. Like the trend of loving dogs, it reflects nothing more than their xenophobia. Dogs keep their growing fears of personal violations and morality at bay. Babies are in an effort to claim their fears of genetic annihilation. Their fears of genetic annihilation are real. They are a diminishing people on this planet. They have been experiencing negative population growth for decades now. About 30 years ago, they were talking about zero population growth, being very stagnant. For one is born, one dies, one is born. But no, they're experiencing negative population growth. For every two die, only one is born. And it may be even more than that. Fear drove the European xenophobia as they came crashing down from the Caucasus Mountains and genocidally moved against the world. Fear drives them now to protect their ill-gotten, waning privilege. That's why I say it's, I don't use white supremacy. They are not white and they shown the hell ain't supreme. What I use is European, Caucasian, extremism. They're very extreme in what they have done. I mean, damn it, when you look at the planet, what they have done, they are extreme. You look at us and how we speak and how we act and how we behave. You look at us. They did this to us. They are extreme. They caused us not to love ourselves. Even to this day, you see people doing crazy things to themselves, bleaching their skin, colored eyes, hair, changing our features, causing a pathology in us. They are extreme. European, Caucasian, extremism, racism. That's the only word that I used defining them in terms of racism, because they created the idea of race, giving themselves a top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. Johann Blumenbach, look him up. Carol Linnaeus. Look up the European, what he has done. And privilege. They believe they are privileged in the world. Just like when Francis Cress Welsing was saying in the ISIS papers, the game of pool. The pool table is green, which could symbolize the planet. The pool table is green. Then she says, the rack of the balls. All the balls have color. And the families of humanity in color, except the white ball, the one that is absent of color. But it is privileged in the game of pool because it shoots all the other balls off the table. And if it goes in the pocket, it can come back out again to shoot more. And of course, the object of the game is to take all the balls off the table. And usually in a game of, quote, eight ball, it is the last ball, the black ball, that must go in the pocket by the white ball, because that is the ball that has the melanin, the high melanin concentration, which of course can eliminate the European on the planet. The fear. Affirm, I have African standards. Affirm, I have African standards. November 21st. What about the good Caucasian people? Do the sins of the father translate to the sons? Of course, yes. The son is the father. The daughter is the mother. The children are the parents. The grandparents, the very progenitors of the racist, phenotypical cultural type. It is them. Ikwe Arman. Capitalist economics pursue those markets which generate the greatest profits. But those pursuits are not accidental. They inevitably follow the interests of the only cultural seed, this very seed, which could birth the capitalist mind. Warfare is their biggest business. The biggest part of the budget of Europeans, brothers and sisters, is military. The biggest part of the budget in cities, in major cities, is police departments. Police departments. So when we call out defund the police, we were saying, because it's how bad this society is. No, we're not saying get rid of the damn police. But we're saying is money needs to go to other areas of human need, education, programming. And so, James Clyburn and the Democrats, we shouldn't have said defund the police. They all got scared. Damn that. Be radical. Be progressive. I can't wait till this Biden term gets going to see what's that. I ain't got no illusions, okay? In fact, if these two Senate seats are not won by Democrats, it's going to be a moot point for him anyway. So if he is able to do anything, he needs these two Democratic seats of Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff to defeat that elongated head-ass heifer, Kelly Loeffler. I'd vote for Trump 100% and Perdue, who's been a senator for quite a while and who's manipulative. Just like, I don't know if he's related to the governor, Perdue, probably so. Same damn family. Consequently, they have turned the world into a war zone. Their propaganda of peace on earth could not have lasted because peace is not in their nature. Reading an article, you know, one thing about the fire service, when I would go in to work, did a lot of reading. In fact, because of the fire service, the elevation of my consciousness is, you know, and my understanding of stuff became more real because I had a chance to stay at the firehouse. If we didn't go on a fire or any other calls, I did a lot of reading. And I remember reading the newspapers. I would go into work and I would read the paper from the day before, the day of, and then I read the paper for the next day. So, you know, but I was reading this article and they're talking about peace. They had a study of peace on earth. And the study came back, we can't afford it. We can't afford to have peace. We got to have war. We got to sell military arms. We got to have, now there's a base around the world, almost 100 bases around the world. There are about 30 some bases on the continent. I'm talking about the United States. I ain't talking about just Europeans. I'm talking about the United States. A social system based on jealousy, dominance necessarily breeds antagonism between individuals, and as the populations of their mindset increase, warfare will naturally ensue. Not surprisingly, they are and will forever be who they have always been. That's why we cannot change them. We keep crying, hoping, pleading, begging, marching, sit-ins, you praying, you name it. Our situation is more tenuous today than it was even 30, 40 years ago. The other, I think it was Monday, I did a piece on 50 years later, our condition is worse. 50 years! Affirm, I know we are who we are they are who they are. Affirm, I know we are who we are, and I know they are who they are. And it's nothing, they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they are superior. They ain't a damn thing, even though there's a plethora of information to prove otherwise, but they believe that. And they don't want to hear a damn thing that we got to say about it. They suffer from European or Caucasian fragility. They don't want to hear it. They sure in the hell don't want to hear it from us because they don't even want to hear it from Caucasians. They don't want to hear about what they have done. The murder, the thievery, the debauchery. They don't want to hear that. That's the damn truth. But they have this idea of manifest destiny. They have this idea that they were born to rule. And they believe that they rule justly and righteously. They bring civilization. The only thing they've ever done was bring destruction. The only thing they ever done, the only thing they ever continue to do is bring destruction. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, saw this piece. I'm gonna talk about it. I don't know. I had my brother Akil Parker, educator from Philadelphia. We had, in fact, at the very last minute he had something come up, unfortunately, and I respect that, and so I had to change, you know, the whole thing around, because I was prepared to discuss a sister named Maida Springer. Maida Springer. The sister, and if you can go to Wikipedia and check her out, but I could try to find all other things on her, and I really couldn't. But she was outstanding in the labor movement. She was also a Pan-Africanist. And I looked forward to that conversation with him. He has the book this brother wrote about Mama Maida. That's what people, particularly in Africa, called her as she was organizing. But, you know, in the labor movement, it's interesting. Because a lot of times in that damn movement, we were excluded and on the fringe. But then again, we had jobs that required for us to organize. And so you had A. Philip Randolph and the sleeping car porters. And you have other labor movements. Well, of course, I was a firefighter, and we have a huge union, the International Association of Firefighters Union, you know. And in its locals, our local was number 215 or local 7 in Chicago and the various other locals. And one of the things that's interesting about those is that the membership, the rank and file, I ain't talking about the executive board and so forth, because they have been democratic for decades. But its membership have been Republican for decades. For decades. They have been Republican. And many of them, quite sure, were at rallies for Donald Trump. In fact, there's supposed to be a rally for him tomorrow, I believe, in Milwaukee or someplace in and around, whatever. May not be in Milwaukee, may be in one of the suburbs, another county, whatever. I don't know. But it's... one of the main people organizing is Sheriff David Clark. That Negro. Sheriff David Clark. And, you know, because he became huge when the Tea Party happened. Of course, the Tea Party started around 2010, right after Barack was elected. The Tea Party came in. Of course, Barack had the advantage for a couple of years of having both the House and the Senate. And then, of course, he lost that because of the reaction to him as being an American African in the White House and the possibilities of doing things very progressively, maybe. But then again, you know, I'm the one who rails against Barack, but particularly because of the murder of Muammar Gaddafi, and particularly of how he treated Africa and Africans. So I'm adverse to him because of that. But, you know, and of course that locally or here in the States, he's president, and really nothing was really done. Now, you feel something was really done by Barack, you know. Yes, there was the Affordable Health Care Act, but, you know, I'm talking about something specific for us. There were specific things that were done for homosexuals, specific things that were done for Hispanics, specific things, definitely. There are always going to be specific things done for European Jews, okay? I just saw that Pompeo is over in Israel saying that the occupied lands should be treated as if, you know, you just have them and just ignore the Palestinians. Just do what the hell you want to do. And I think that we could. Yeah. Well, in the campaign, I did mention this, that Trump went to Minnesota. And even the article states that it because of the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg at that time and other things that were happening, this didn't get any play. Had there been nothing happening, this may have. Somebody would have picked it up. But this is a piece from Rolling Stone. May have picked this up because this was, you know, overt call of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, stating that you genetically are superior. The Europeans have been talking about people's genetics because you know why? They got a problem with their genetics. They know it. Well, of course, those in the know know it. But those, of course, who have a belief that they are bamboozled. Trump preached European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege in Minnesota, and America barely noticed. Touting the racehorse theory. You know the racehorse theory. You know, if you don't know the racehorse theory, that says that you can breed a racehorse to be the best racehorse. In fact, racehorses that you see in the Kentucky Derby, in the Belmont Stakes, you know, in Pimlico, those were bred. Dogs are bred. We were bred. That's like when Jimmy the Greek Snyder, he was a handicapper, gambling, betting, and he got a job with CBS to give and explain why the odds were depicted the way they were. Well, somebody asked him a question. He was at some kind of function, and he talked about, American Africans playing quarterback. Because at the time, very few. The last two positions that were played by us was the middle linebacker and the quarterback, because those two positions, individual had to be a thinking person. He called out the defenses as a middle linebacker. He called plays and ran plays as the quarterback. So those two particular positions, they believe, were reserved for Caucasians. And he even made mention of that. But he said, we bred them. That's why American African athletes are so superior, because we bred them to be superior. No, you. In fact, some of our people believe that that sugar, honey, iced tea. No, they did not. Yes, they bred us, but not to be a superior. No, they bred us to be more of us. So working. Workhorses. We're superior, period. The West Coast of Africa, those Africans are fast. Nigerians, Ghanaians, and so forth. They're fast. The East Africans, Ethiopia, Somalia, Eritrea, and so forth, those brothers and sisters can run distances. They have endurance. They weren't bred. It is just genetically, that's who they are. Genetically, that's who they are. And so, in the racehorse theory, you breathe. And so Trump is saying, you Minnesotans, you have superior genetics. People listen while Trump speaks during a Great American Comeback rally in Minnesota in September. Last Friday, on the night that Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, Trump made a campaign appearance in a small city in northern Minnesota. Trump played to his base instincts of an enduring crowd at the airport, where mega hats outnumbered face masks, of course, by an extraordinary margin. You know, all them, they estimated at least over 7,000 people got coronavirus, and maybe 300-400 people have died because of Trump, directly because of Trump. I mean, when you look at the over 250,000 people who have not already died and the 11 million people who have coronavirus, the problem is Donald damn Trump. I want to play it down. Man, I smack the sugar honey iced tea out of Trump, you know? Out of the gates that evening's rally, Trump stroked naivetism in the state that has resettled large numbers of refugees from Somalia. One of the most vital issues in the election is the subject of refugees, said Trump, who has fought to block humanitarian resettlement and displaced people in the United States. You know, it is perhaps better than almost anyone you know. Lots of luck. Are you having a good time with your refugees? Trump spews the bile at Ilhan Omar, herself a Somali refugee who serves in Congress, spouting a baseless theory that she was once married to her own brother. Omar calls that accusation absurd and offensive. Shifting topics, but not gears, Trump then addresses the racial unrest in Minnesota that followed the homicide of George Floyd at the hands of the police. Trump recounted his push to have the National Guard sent in, insisting you would have Minneapolis if he hadn't, he said. He then recounted with a sadistic delight how the NBC correspondents of color, Ali Vashi, got injured with a lethal round and was stunned aside by in his larynx by law enforcement as he marched through the city. Wasn't it a beautiful sight? Trump said. He called out. He calls it law and order. With his racist warm-up complete, Trump then veered into the open endorsement of eugenics, the discredited theory that the human race can be improved with selective breeding for superior traits. The theory has an ugly history in America, and of course, Adolf Hitler embraced eugenics in Nazi Germany, giving rise to the program of race hygiene that culminated in the extermination of millions of European Jews and other people at death camps. You have good genes. You know that, right? Trump said to the nearly Caucasian crowd. A lot of it is about the genes, isn't it? Don't you believe it? The racehorse theory, Trump said. You think that you're so different? You have good genes in Minnesota. You know, and then he had the nerve to say, as a historian who has written about the Holocaust, I'll say bluntly, this is indistinguishable from the Nazi rhetoric that led to the European Jews, disabled people, LGBTQ, Romania, and others being exterminated. This is America 2020. This is where the GOP has taken us. Trump's belief in eugenics has long been whispered about, but Trump has perhaps never announced it so publicly. In the Frontline film that aired in advance of the 2016 election, Trump biographer revealed that his family very deeply attracted to eugenics, beginning with his father, Fred Trump, who introduced Donald to the racehorse theory. Narrator, Fred had theories. He shared them with his kids. Donald especially liked them. About the Trump, the author, Michael D'Antonio, about the Trumps. This is a very deep part of the Trump story. The family subscribes to the racehorse theory of human development. They believe that they are superior people and that if they put together the genes of superior women and superior men, you get superior offspring. You get superior offspring. Let me play this. It's not very long. We'll play this right quick.
Fred had theories. He shared them with his kids. Donald especially liked one of them.
This is a very deep part of the Trump story. The family subscribes to a racehorse theory of human development, that they believe that there are superior people, and that if you put together the genes of a superior woman and a superior man, you get a superior offspring.
They were tough, and they were strong. You have good genes, you know that, right? You have good genes. A lot of it's about the genes, isn't it? Don't you believe? The racehorse theory, you think we're so different? You have good genes.
Yeah. Yes, Donald J. Trump. Yeah. So, it doesn't take a secret to decode. It doesn't take a secret decoder ring to understand what Trump was aiming at in Minnesota. The idea that Caucasian Minnesotans, like racehorses, have superior inheritable genes, and of course that is European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, better known as white supremacy. Embraced not as a cultural construct, embraced not as a cultural construct, but as if they were based in hard science, in hard fact. In another moment, Trump remarks what would have been more front page scandal. But on Friday, as America reeled of the death of a feminist icon whose departure threatens to accelerate a generation-long right-wing takeover of America's highest court, in which, of course, we all know now that it happened. In fact, he hardly got out of the fact that she had passed that he said, I'm going to appoint. I mean, it was just the same damn day, if not the next day. I'm going to appoint a Supreme Court justice. As well as a form of death toll in the coronavirus pandemic that has surpassed 200,000 then, 250,000 now. Trump's open embrace of eugenics hardly sparked a notice. But it's time to wake up to this, to the threat before us. We have an aspiring authoritarian individual who romanticizes martial law and dreams of locking up his political opponents. Trump does not recoil from the most dangerous ideology of the 21st century, but instead embraces it on the campaign trail in increasingly explicit terms. These may be dark times in America, but if Trump is not stopped at the ballot box in November, the democracy is in danger of fading. It says fading to black. Damn, that is fading to white. Oh, man, it's almost time for a break. I'm going to take that break. And when I come back, please stay on the line. We'll have some conversation. I do want to say seven things about the passing of Jerry Rawlings. You know, because Jerry Rawlings, in fact, even though some of us, you know, saw it and so forth, but Jerry Rawlings was outstanding as a leader, even though he won Ghana in a coup, but he transformed the country. I wish they would embrace it even more and do the kind of things to help the country improve and utilize the resources to improve the education, the infrastructure, housing, all of those things for the people of Ghana. So we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Here they really get down over there.
Well, to myself, well,
doing rocking to the beat.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. This program, of course, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Wahad Ahmed, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Cambon and her daughter, Nataki Cambon. And then followed by that, well, every first and third Mondays is Conversation Reparations at 9, from 9 to 10 with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Thursdays, After 7 with hosts from 7 to 9 with host Shani B. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. Then at 7, from 7 to 9, Sankofa, the Elders Council with host Brother Alfonso Watkins. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. I'm going to get to some calls, and then I'm going to get to this piece on Brother Jerry Rawlings. 414-414, good afternoon, or good morning. It's on a 414. That's a Milwaukee number. 414. Hey, it's brother. It's a Runehead. Black Laws. Black Laws for Black people. Right on. What's up, brother? How you doing, brother?
Right. All right. Had a whole bunch, man. You were touching on a lot of subjects, man.
Yeah.
Look, I was watching Henry Louis Gates on PBS.
Okay.
Oh my God. And he was over there in Africa, man. And he was talking about how black people sold black people into slavery.
Yeah.
And the way that they distort that idea, the way they distort it, man, it's atrocious, man.
Yeah. I agree. I hate it. And I have a disdain for Henry Louis Gates. That's why Dr. John Henry Clark kicked his ass and a few other people. Because he's really not a historian. But, you know, Harvard and its, you know, because he's there, he's actually he's literary. His field is literary, but they made him a historian, and of course he has these things with PBS, you know, the DNA piece, the historical piece, you know, and I've watched him, but he speaks as if it's not him, that it's not. What has happened is not him. He speaks as if it's outside or third person, and I really take offense to it. You know,
right?
But yeah,
he speaks as if he's a European.
Yep.
Yeah. He looks at European, exactly, man.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I wanted to touch on, man, what you touched on, Luther King, man. He talked about when we talk about the European perspective of domination. Dr. Martin Luther King addressed that, man. He called it the DMI, the drum major instinct.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And he was warning them to try to harness it. And he was telling them how pernicious their personality had become because they did not control the DMI in them, the drum major instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And but at the same time, our drum major instinct is being starved.
Right.
And that's
it's
part
suppressed.
Of our big problem.
Yep, it's suppressed.
Right.
Well, the bottom line is that, you know, theirs and ours is a clash. And their contention is we must suppress it. We must control it. In fact, I look at their awakening, you know, when, you know, we taught them. They came and sat at our feet in ancient Kemet, and we taught the Greeks, and then they came back as conquerors. Then when they went into a medieval or dark age, we once again taught them because the only light or information that was going on in Europe was in Western Europe, with the Moors, you know, and they taught them once again many, many things over that 700-year period. And then, of course, they had their awakening, which they called their Renaissance, and Charlemagne. And that's why that brother shouldn't use that damn name, Charlemagne. I hate that. But anyway, Charlemagne and Martel and all those folks, you know, they had that awakening, which they call their Renaissance, and what the deal was is that they you know they kicked the Moors and the Sephardic Jews out of Spain and Portugal, and then they said we may war amongst ourselves because we are a warring people. Damn, they're a warring people, but we're going to come together on everybody outside of us, and that's what they did. And then when they traveled. Right. You know, the whole idea was not to bring knowledge and information and shit. No, when they traveled was to find out what they could get, who they could suppress, who they could screw, and then and maybe even take their land, you know. And that's what they did.
That's the big conference.
Yeah, right? their manifest destiny, you know. So,
and another thing, man, I wanted to touch on is I was listening to Things Fall Apart in Chebe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a day of peace.
You, Brother LaRue, you broke up. State it again.
Okay, it's like they have a day of peace.
A day of peace, okay.
No violence, no violence, no anger, no nothing. And if you violated that rule for that day, severe punishment.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, if we did that, man, if we had a day of peace, we would wreck the economy because the judicial system is so dependent on us getting all caught up in it. There's an expansive industry.
Well, crime. Anyway, well, crime pays. Crime pays in this country. You know,
pays them.
It pays. Everything is about them. You know, it pays.
Exactly.
It pays in terms of the increase in the prison industrial complex, the increase in judiciary, the increase in all of the lawyers and all of these things. It pays.
Right.
It's on
our
back.
I was thinking, man, we have holidays, you know, like Kwanzaa and stuff like that. But, if we just had one day of peace, man, what would that do?
Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Violence, huh?
Yeah, that would be great. And work real hard to leading up to that particular day, squashing all beefs, you know, getting rid of all the territory. Yeah, just for that one day. Just for that one day, and maybe, hopefully, the next day, and the day after, and the week after, the month after, the year after, the day, we would have peace within ourselves. I ain't talking about with Caucasian, because that's not going to happen. They're not a peaceful people, you know. They're a very warmongering people. Just as I said when I sat at the firehouse table and read that newspaper, the Journal sent, you know, and it talked about, you know, this general said, we can't afford to have peace. Peace is out of the question, you know?
When you said that that's what made me think of in Chebe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A day of peace, man, for us, amongst ourselves.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are the three topics.
Okay, well, hey, stick around, man. We'll talk more.
Of course.
All right, dear brother.
Dear brother. Peace.
602, good afternoon.
Yes, Brother Osha. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Marcus. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great, good brother.
Thank you.
You know, the psychological traits of these people, you know, they are megalomaniacs, kleptomaniacs, homicidal maniacs, pathological liars.
Yes.
That is their DNA. That is embedded in the DNA. So we try to reform the unreformable.
Yes.
These people can't be reformed.
No.
You know?
No, they can't. Not by us. That's for damn sure. They don't want to hear a damn thing that we gotta say. Because they have already firmly put it into their mind that they are superior and we are inferior. They firmly put it into their minds.
Exactly, and there's nothing you can say to them or do to them to let them, you know. The only thing we can do is like what the Chinese do. The Chinese say, look, if I catch you too close to me, you die.
Yep.
That's the way the Chinese deal with them, you see. So they're not, you know, our people trying to reform them. You know, they're thieves.
Yeah.
Everything they steal, they stole our music. You know, they stole jazz.
Right.
You
know they are cultural bandits. They are thieves.
Exactly.
They are appropriators. That's what they are. They have no originality. You know?
I'm telling you. So, you know, it's not hatred. It's just that's the way they are.
Yeah.
And the sooner our people realize that. And, you know, because we spend so much time trying to get along with these people when our problem is trying to get along with each other. Forget about them.
Yeah.
Work on us. And we get into that point, you know, because, again, condition is going to drive us to that crisis.
Right.
Hey, some dangerous days fin to come, brother. Anyway. Keep on keeping on.
Right on, Brother Marcus. Appreciate you, man. Thanks you for listening. Stay right on. Appreciate that. Yep. 646. Good afternoon.
What's happening, Brother Odios? I beg to differ with both you and Marcus.
Oh, you do? Well, go ahead.
The white man is the most loving and caring and sensitive dirtbag on the planet. Ain't nothing like the white man.
That's right.
The white man, as they say, is God.
He's God. He's got a God complex.
Yeah,
white man's got a God complex.
Office and a devil. That's all he is. He ain't of no value that black people should ever look up to, man. I don't understand our people, man. I mean, the greatest display of the nature of the white man is being shown to you on national TV
today,
devil Trump.
Exactly.
I mean, it's mind-boggling how this man is allowed to get away and to do what he's doing to the point to where as it may burn this mother down, and I'm loving it. Yeah. I can't think of anything better. The only thing that could be better if he's able to stay in office at 12 o'clock on, what is it,
January 20th.
If that happened, then I really know that the white man is gangster.
Because
he's already destroyed the country.
Yeah.
He
has an army of hate. You know, he is just like that piece I just read about what he said while he was in Minnesota about, you know, the racehorse theory, saying to them, you are superior. Not just Minnesotans, Europeans, Caucasians, white people, period. You know, and of course his deplorable group. He has developed an army of hate, and these individuals believe everything that this man says. I mean, it's criminal. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. In this day and age, of information, when you are hearing him, seeing him, and doing what he's doing, and yet you still voted for him, it really is incomprehensible that 70 million people voted for his ass.
Oh, it's real, man. It's real.
70 million people.
70 million is basically going to be a fraction in the country moving forward. And then on top of that, you got the most evilest white man in the country that have more power than the president do, Mitch McConnell. If we were really a country about development, growth, prosperity, and all of these things that these crackers talk about, you know McConnell would get the South African burden that looks at the drop of the dime.
He could not be in the position to impede
progress on the level that he has and the level that he does without being removed. I don't really think that there's countries in the world that have the structure that America does in a sense of so-called democracy that would allow somebody like that to be in the position that he's in, to whereas he's stopping people that aren't even in the spotlight, OC, that are not even in everyday vision from being able to live.
Yeah.
To live. I mean, think about it. You got countries that are giving their residents, because of this corona, thousands of dollars a month. And here it is in 6 months. Yeah. The greatest country in the world, all you've given them is
$1,200. $1,200.
It's madness.
Yeah.
And for it to be... Let me tell you something. There are people out here, that are going hungry. That anytime you saw what you saw in Texas, with all of those white folks, basically.
Did you see that man in Texas? For miles.
Yeah. I went to the grocery store yesterday, and I went in there, bruh,
And I mean, it's crazy, man. And the prices are going up on sure. everything.
Sure.
I mean, it's so crazy. They got this thing that I like. I like peanut butter cups. You know the chocolate mm-hmm. peanut butter cups?
Sure.
I used to get them for $2.99 for a nice package. You know, a nice package. Did you know they went up to $3.29?
Of course.
Did you know
everything going up.
Basically in the store went up like 10, 15, 20 cents.
You know why, Jay? We live in capitalism. Everything must constantly get higher and higher. You know, I remember many, many, many years ago, I'm reading this piece about, you know, how a entity, business, stocks, whatever, it made $1.2 million that year. But the following year, it only made $800,000. It still made money. It made $800,000. But it did. See, the idea is it made $1.2 million. It should have made $1.5 million or $2 million, you see. So it's constantly higher and higher and higher. That's why you have these folks who are billionaires. And that happened. And that happened with Ronald Reagan. Ronald Wilson Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. Just like when Trump and Theresa May, the same situation. Those collaborators, they're both Europeans, American and Britain. And they control monetary wealth around the damn world. And so Ronald Reagan, he's the one that broke all those barriers so people could make tons of dough at the expense of working people. Wages have been stagnated for basically years. In fact, they finally coming around to a decent workable wage here in this country.
I don't know where at with the unemployment the way that it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta go tomorrow and take the young sister and her kid food shopping. I don't mind. I like doing it, but you know, it's crazy when you gotta explain to somebody that you don't want nothing in return. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I always tell her. I said, look, the only thing you can give me in return is making sure that you continue to do what you do and that your kid do what he has to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm telling you right now, if your kid not doing what he's supposed to do, then I had no reason to feed you.
Mm.
I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
This is not for me. I'm straight. This is for you because you work so hard and you have a kid that I've seen you work so hard to make sure that he do the right thing. That's
mm-hmm.
why I'm trying to help you the best that I can. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just be appreciative. You don't owe me nothing. I don't want nothing from you. You can't give me nothing other than continue to make yourself better and your kids'
right.
life better. But there's so many of them out there.
Yeah.
I mean, out in the street and you walk by certain places that have food banks or pantries
sure.
or things like that, you always got a long line, man. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
I've never seen it like this. And I mean, you know, I'm somebody that don't get around that much, but I get around enough to know what's going on. I mean, you got a spot, man, in Harlem where every Thursday, I think it's Tuesday and Thursday, there's long, long lines with people with shopping carts and things of that nature just to get a little bit of food.
Right.
Just a little bit
right.
of food. And here it is. We got a country that allowed this to happen. And mind you, don't talk about the people that are now becoming homeless. But this is America.
Right.
This
understand America's about individualism, materialism, greed,
yep.
and violence. Individualism. And so there's certain individuals who are doing quite well. They're doing well. They're doing exceedingly well. I know you probably heard me say this because I've said this so many times about what happens with us here in America. Yeah. You know, the percentages. You know, there's some of us, you know, out of 100%, 40% of us are just getting by. We're just getting by.
I don't even think it's that much.
You know what? Now, and you're right. You're right. Because of the pandemic. But even still using that matrix, using those percentages. And then there's another 40% of us who aren't doing well at all. We're unemployed and underemployed. Or we're homeless. So that's 80%. Then there's 10% of us who are doing okay. Myself, I got a pension. Thank God. I hope the city of Milwaukee stays solvent. You know, I got some other money that, you know, you put in way in deferred. So all that kind of stuff. So I'm all right. But yet and still, I have to help my family, brother. You know, I have two daughters. Bro. I have to help my family still. So I'm blessed in this position. And some of us are. That's another 10%. And then there's another 10% who are doing exceedingly well. They ain't in that billionaires club. Maybe a couple are. But they're in that millionaires club. They're doing exceedingly well. They live in gated communities, cul-de-sacs, and subdivisions. They're doing exceedingly well, you know. But yet the majority of our people are not. And they're not supposed to, particularly in this environment. And even those like myself, I'm just a paycheck or two away. You know, from going into that same category that the majority of our people are in, and many of us are, and some of us are going into it. This is a very tough time. This pandemic, and of course, the person that has led the world, which is United States, and its so-called leader, Donald Trump, caused it to be this way.
I mean, the man don't even have the type of capacity
he has
or the nature to even speak to the public.
No.
I mean, do you notice since the cloud lost, nobody sees the cloud, so nobody knows what the cloud is doing other than texting like some lunatic? I hope that Twitter bans his ass once he's no longer the president. That would be the best thing that they could do for the country.
Well, to me, once he's not the president, once January 20th comes, he will not be the president. And if he's in the White House, he'll be escorted out based upon everything that I've heard. You know, although there's some people say, well, there's no law. No, believe me, once January 20th comes and he's still there, he's out. And
They're gonna remove him. The thing is, how much trouble is he gonna cause in the meantime, and how much trouble is he gonna cause with not being in the White House? And I'm just hoping and praying.
Well, listen, here's an example,
New York
Jay.
State go after him.
Oh, they are. Oh, once he's not president, New York's going to go after him.
But hold on, Oshie. You heard that Biden's basically put it out there that the federal government is not going to do anything to mess with him.
Well, let me say this: what's going to happen to me? Any federal charges? I use this particular scenario because it already happened. It happened with Nixon. Okay, so now he's going to pardon all his cronies on a federal level. Yeah. They may have state issues to deal with, but all of them on the federal level, they got a pardon, okay? All them criminally minded individuals, his sons, his daughter, that's done on the federal level, you know? And so then he gets ill or whatever, he turns it over to Pence. Right before January 20th, Pence pardons him on the federal level. It's all done. But now on the state level, in various states, he's got to deal with. He has like five lawsuits that he has to deal with, you know, from taxes.
In trouble in New York State.
Yeah.
I hope they go after him big time. He's in big trouble.
You know, and then, of course, that's why he's still trying to remain president, because he knows what's going to be on his ass once he's out. You know, that's how he's still trying to. But, you know, it just goes to show how gullible and how foolish the electorate is and the people in this country is, particularly those who want to maintain and sustain, European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, what they will do. That's why they call us an army of hate.
Oh, do you know the saddest thing in the world is when you see one of these dumb Negroes defend this sugar honey ice?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it infuriates me. It is pathetic. It infuriates me to no end.
It is pathetic.
It's disturbing to watch a black person try to defend somebody that's trying to kill you and your people.
Right.
Trying to defend
the indefensible.
I will never understand. I mean, yeah. It's mind-boggling.
Well, I understand it in the context of Caucasian control. I understand it, you know, because you bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of your inability, and you're also being bombarded, just like I talk about cognitive dissonance. Just as they believe that they are superior, we have believed that we are inferior. And so in our inferiority, we want to be like the Caucasian. We want to be like the white man. We want to have what he has. It's just like, that's why I say, you know, I don't want to talk about black. We're not black. But those who want to profess black, they don't want to be African. They don't want to be African. They want to be black. But black meaning that is opposite of being white, you see. But they want what white has. So they want the jobs, they want the materialism, they want the cars, they want the live in the office overlooking the city skyline. They want all those material and all those trinkets and things. They black. And of course, black has no allegiance, but only to oneself. Black has no collectivism, you know. They don't give a damn about the numbers and statistics and all the problems that beset American African people consistently, historically, the mass incarceration, the uneducation, the unemployed, underemployed. They don't give a damn about that because I got mine. And if you don't get yours, you know whose fault it is? It's yours. Yeah. They don't recognize the inherent inequalities within this system because they black. You know, some
don't understand how to work together collectively to build institutions and to be in a situation to survive amongst one another to have something. Because, I mean, just think about how many businesses, small businesses that were staying black people in certain areas are now being closed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was talking with a brother last week about the possibility of maybe opening up a restaurant. Mm-hmm. You know, investing with him in a restaurant, and I was saying to him, I would love to do it, but I just don't see the justification of doing it right now. Unless I own the building. If I don't own the building, I'm not going to place myself in that position because of the cost involved and now being in a situation to where, as in New York, they're about to shut it down to where you can't even sit in the restaurant to eat.
Right.
And mind you,
right.
You know, I mean, it's just bad. I mean,
it is.
I've seen places that have set up in the street. You know,
right on the sidewalks, right.
Now trying to convert it to be able to, put heat and things of that nature. I'm not sitting out there eating in no place.
Got you a bubble. They got the little heaters on the side. You know, but the bottom line is this, though. But the bottom line is this, though, is that something like that drastically has to happen. Had Trump understood, and he said he did. He got advised. He was comprised of what this virus was, how it was contracted, how it could be spread. He knew all of that, and he said that to Bob Woodward, okay, in a book that has already been out. He knew that back in February. He knew it and didn't do a damn thing through all of the month of March but play golf. He knew it, you know, and had he done that and told the American people and basically where he says, hey, we understand what is happening with this virus, and this is what we must do. We must wear a mask, social distance. We're going to close stuff down, you know, or because we want to suppress this to an extent where it's manageable for us and we know what we have to do. But he didn't. He allowed it to spread, and now it is hitting harder than it's hitting harder now, Jay, than it was back in June.
Yes,
back in May.
Isn't he
back
the guy that said that he would never golf because he would work so hard
yeah.
for the American people? I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, he's a liar.
It's crazy. I don't understand how we allow for this to go on and there's not a serious contradiction in the narrative on how do you let this clown get away with this? I mean, it to me is crazy. I understand it,
yeah.
But I really don't understand it in a sense that we allow it to go down, because how do you have a situation, a country like this, like you said, where so few people are progressing and the majority of the country is declining?
Yeah.
And I mean,
yeah.
Anytime I see white folks taking a fall, I don't have no issue with it. But then you see the flip side of it. You got people going out here because they work in certain industries buying million-dollar houses.
Yeah.
And you got people going hungry. I mean, how do you justify that? I mean, how do you show that? But you won't show the true poverty and suffering of people for what? You want to keep them around? And on top of that, your population is becoming stupider and stupider because the kids now are not being educated because the system is not geared to educate them at a time of a pandemic. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we're going backwards.
Yeah, the dumbing down of America, no doubt.
This last year, OC, we, as a so-called country, because I don't give a damn about it.
No, I don't.
It's going backwards.
Yeah, and it's going to get worse.
If you got a grandson, right? If you're not leading your grandson into the right field and endeavors for his future, he in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just that real, because the reality is, and the circumstances are, that there's only gonna be a few sectors in this country to whereby people will be able to survive. I don't even know if the restaurant industry in the next 5 years will even be valuable.
Well, a lot of them are closed.
Because we never may be able to see it again the way that we were seeing six.
Well, let me say this.
Ago.
Let me say this. I'm quite sure before 18. Before 1918, they had businesses that were doing, and then of course that pandemic hit, and then after that, it went back to somewhat normalcy. And I'm quite sure that after this subsides, but although it's going to be a while, it is not going to be next year possibly. And I believe that the raging of this coronavirus will lead off into the spring. So these next 4 or 5 months is going to be really tough, really tough. And the fact that you should not go nowhere. In fact, it is said next week, Thursday, only the people in your immediate family that you have been contacting with and so forth should come together. Even people who are relatives you ain't seen in a while, you should be, you know, concerned, because somebody may come in the house. You ain't seen them in a while. They may be asymptomatic. Here you are, like myself, of age, of a precondition. And then next thing I know, because that didn't happen like that during Thanksgiving, now I'm on a respirator in Christmas, you know. Although I don't celebrate it.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad I don't celebrate it. So
yeah.
I care less, because it ain't no way in hell I put myself in that position to get sick over some food and being in a room with some family members who, if the truth be told, most of them, you don't even want to be in the room with them because they Negroes.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna keep it real.
I mean, I tell anybody.
I like to go to family gatherings for the entertainment of the drunk uncle or the sassy aunt who decides she want to act the fool and he want to act the fool. I'm the type, I'll sit there and egg them on.
Well, listen, I like to go.
I want to see the show.
I like to go because I like to go because of family, and I love to hug them and touch them and listen to them and listen to me. You know, I've tried to organize family reunions many times. Was successful a couple of times here in Atlanta.
I got an uncle, man, that once he have him a few too many.
His own,
he a complete fool. And let me tell you, I pass him a drink at around 3 o'clock, and I get him right by 5:30.
And then the show was on, huh?
After I done ate, and I let it pop off, and I mean, my only thing is, I'm like, damn, what? That video recorded, you know, but a couple of years ago when they first started having camera, you know, video on your phone, I got a little clipping of them in action. And let me tell you something. You would not believe that the old Negro was as crazy as he is because he in church on every Sunday.
Well, hey.
He's a deacon in the church. Hey. But when he get him some Jesus juice in He a complete fool.
Yeah, in this zone. Okay, I got another call. Jay, you hang with me. I got another call. Let me take this call.
All right, brother.
All right. Good afternoon. Mama Nabantu, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Good to hear you.
Great.
Good.
I remember the beginning you talked about how DACA and HBTQ, whatever it is, got what they wanted pretty much and why we did. My understanding is that they were there at the White House every day.
Okay.
And they had lobbyists and they lobbied for what they wanted.
Sure.
But have we as a people been at the White House every day for reparations for what we wanted? Have we been there with our lobbyists? And I don't know if we have. I don't think we have.
Well, I mean, but, you know, you had John Conyers for decades trying to at least get the bill H.R. 40 just to have a study of the impact. Didn't talk about money, didn't talk, just to study the issue of the impact of captivity on our people. And then you had a few others, but no. And in fact, one of the things that you said, Mama Nabantu, about a lobbyist, you know, that individual must get paid. You know, and paid him or her handsomely, and that's something that we haven't done. You know, but what about the Congressional Black Caucus? That's what they're there for. You know, to collectively come together and talk about the issues that are affecting us. In fact, it's just right now that they finally said the Congressional Black Caucus is four square behind the issue of reparations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't.
Right.
You know.
We have been able to pull the money together to get our own lobbyists, like the Latino Hispanic community,
or especially the European Jews, or other industries, particularly like the pharmaceutical industry or the gun lobby. Those, I mean, they're talking about legislators raking in hundreds of thousands of dollars and over periods of time, millions of dollars from those entities. You know, that's why to me, some of the folks, you know, you can't be trusted. I mean, like brother from Jersey, senator from Jersey, his name escapes me now. But I mean, Cory Booker has, I mean, he's been a big lobby to the pharmaceutical companies, big lobby. You know, they all he's all up in their pocket, you know. So to me, you know, I advocate independence and self-determination when we deal with anybody, you know, And we coming straight. We coming from the heart. We coming direct. We ain't wavering. We ain't stuttering. This is the deal. This is what we demand. You know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you go there, that's why we get crumbs, because we go there acting like beggars, and beggars get nothing but crumbs. You know? But the bottom line, though,
you have no infrastructure in place to make the demand of reparations, because if they don't give it to you, what could you do to hurt them? I mean, the election, now is the time in Atlanta. Think about this right quick. For black people to get whatever the hell they want from the people in so-called power in Atlanta, because they want those two Senate seats so bad. So if we were really organized, we could make concrete demands. But we're not in that position. Because remember, if I'm not mistaken, one of the seats are up in 2 years.
Right.
I think. I'm not sure.
It is.
But I think one may be up.
Right. Because, you know, they don't have both seats up at the same time. You know, so one will just, in fact, that's the one that Raphael Warnock and Kelly Loeffler are going for.
Right.
Because that was a Caucasian old dude named Isaacson who retired. He had to retire, you know. Brother LaRue Ned, you still with me?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, you got some comment?
You know what? I was listening to speaking about Trump and this recount going on. And they're talking about whether they want to count the people, the foreigners that's coming in, as whether they want to count them as part of the population or not. And you know what that reminded me of back in the days when they called us, they wanted to count us as 3/5 of a person, because that would change the representation in the Congress.
Well, right? That's what they did. That's how they came up with the Electoral College. Because there are certain areas of the country where there's very, very few people, but yet they had no representation. And then, of course, definitely in the Southeast, because there were captive owners. So that individual got so many votes based upon the sizable number of captives that he had, you know. And that's when the Electoral College. See, to me, the Electoral College should be abandoned. They should get rid of the Electoral College. They won't. Because that's how you can lose the popular vote, when the nation says, I vote for that person. I want that person. But yet you can win some selected states like Trump did, like Bush did. All his folks lost in the general election, and Trump lost by the most votes. He lost by 3 million with Hillary. He's lost by over 5, almost 6 million with Biden. So the country says overwhelmingly, no, we don't want your ass. But because he did win some states, because why? Because he has an army of hate. He has a group of people, a group of deplorables. The Republican Party has co-opted the Republican Party. And of course, many of these people are loyal to that party. The loyalties of some people is ridiculous, especially when you see what's going on. How can you support a man like this? Listen, he showed you. He showed you who and what he was prior to the election. He said things.
But check this out. I was talking to somebody about the Electoral College, and they were saying, well, that's how you keep the minority in control, because even if the majority, like what happened last time, that's how Trump got in there, even if the majority voted, whichever way they vote, there's still a way to keep the minority in control. And that's what the Electoral College is about, keeping the minority in control.
Well, the minority in this country, because it is supposed to be majority rules, but who that minority is? Who is that group of people? Because obviously people of wealth are a minority.
Exactly.
In terms of the number. But
exactly.
And, yes. You know.
Exactly. And so look, anybody that's and they're rich. That's what they want to do. That's their hobby, is being a politician. And so when it comes down to that, they're going to do what they want to do. That's why when President Obama got elected, I knew that he was just a figurehead. I mean, and even
man, and if Donald, if, even if Donald Trump ran this country, it would be, there would be no United States country. And so what happened is the president is nothing but a figurehead. And he has a certain amount of power, but he still is doing what the people with the money tell him to do.
Because you're right. You're right, brother. This is an oligarchy. The money people rule. They dominate. The people whose names you don't know and some of the people's names you may know based upon their family and their influence in this country. But this is an oligarchy. It's not a democracy. It's not a – it's an oligarchy. And and they're really embarrassed by Donald Trump. In fact, I think one of the Koch brothers is dead, and he mentioned the fact that we really blew this by supporting that fool and supporting these other ideas. Now, I don't know if he's saying that sincerely, you know, but he's supposedly saying that now we're going to try to put our money into making America better, as a place where people who are has the least of these have some pride or some idea that you're a part of this too. I don't know. I doubt it, because to me, it is those who are in control. They will not relinquish their control.
Down to how much money he's making during this pandemic with the Coke, the Coke guy. But if you look at a lot of his businesses, he's worried about Biden coming in and changing the environmental regulations on them again, because he's such a major polluter of the planet.
Yeah. Go ahead, LaRue.
Yeah. What I'm looking at is, what's that serenity prayer? To change the things you can change.
Right. Right.
The things you can't change, you know, we can't worry about them.
Right. And the wisdom to know the difference.
Exactly. So that's where, you know, I mean, we can talk about what they're doing. I mean, I think most black people, most black American Africans are aware of where the European is coming from. And I think a lot of fear of where they're coming from. So anyway, but I think we should focus on the things that we can change, which is us.
That's right. I agree. Brothers and sisters, it's my time is up. Brother Jay, I appreciate you. Mama Nabantu.
Damn, it go fast,
yeah,
brother.
It does.
Really go fast.
It does.
When you tell the truth about the cracker. You know. Have a good weekend and be safe, folks.
You too, Jay. You too, my brother.
All right.
Mama Nabantu. Have a blessed day. Talk with you soon.
All right.
Take care. Peace to you. Brother LaRue, thank you so much, man. Appreciate you, brother.
Welcome, sir.
I really wanted to come to Milwaukee, man, and visit. I really did, man, but I can't do it. Couldn't do it, man. But I'll catch you soon, okay?
All right,
dear brother. Peace to you. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor, the European, the Caucasian, the cracker, the white man, is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for them. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day, a great weekend. You be safe. Shemhotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bivahorie. Bivahorie means our victorious destiny. Bivahorie, family. We will be victorious. Peace.